Welcome to the NorCal Real Estate Show, where we're talking all things real estate here in Yolo, Sacramento, and Solano counties. My name is Jeremy Higgins. I am the team lead of the Higgins team at eXp Realty, and I am here with my partner, who's always here with me,
Andrew.
Andrew Lujewski. What's going on, my brother?
Chilling.
Hey, so this beard thing, it's actually becoming a real thing. This is the first time I've ever done it. I didn't realize that I had the capability of doing that. I'm actually starting to look a little bit like the Nate Darling. What's going on, Nate?
Not too much. Just really enjoying. God, it's December already.
It is December.
We're a week into December.
I see you're flying some football colors there.
Indeed.
What do you got going on?
Indeed, the Portland Timbers will be playing for the MLS Championship on Saturday.
The Portland Timbers MLS Championship.
All correct. Right.
So I said football, and I was
correct.
Right. I was correct. Yeah. That's rocking. Everything good? Everything here good at the Darling New Media Studios?
Exciting new things happening, looking like for the new year. So yeah, everything's good.
Rock on. Well, we appreciate you having us here. We, my friends, are going to talk about the five most important things to look for when you're accepting an offer. So over the last several weeks, we've talked about a few things that you should do or avoid doing when preparing your home for the market. Now, we want to talk about what do you do when the offers start coming in and how do you know which one to accept? But before we do that, we're going to go to the tip of the day. What do we got, Andrew?
Tip of the day. Presentation is everything, okay? Please spend the money on professional photos and getting your home staged. Over the weekend, we put a home on the market. There was already two other homes listed in that neighborhood, same floor plan as ours. Presentation was not great. Photos were not great. And we put ours on, price slightly lower, better condition, looked immaculate. And the price that we got on it was higher than what those other homes started at, which when ours came on the market, they immediately did price reductions because they knew that they couldn't compete with ours. So our starting price was lower, but we got a higher price than they did. So long story short, you can't afford to not do staging. It's going to cost you more in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, and you use the word afford, but like at the end of the day, like our sellers didn't pay a dime for this photograph, for these photographs or the staging even. So, he's right. I mean, this is a perfect example. These are the ones that we really love. Like we will, you know, be bragging about this one for the next couple of weeks for sure, because we had like identical listings. In fact, there was a house, two or three doors down. It was the same floor plan, except they had one additional bedroom. So you would think, and it was a downstairs bedroom at that. So you would think because it had a downstairs bedroom and it had a pool that it would have been more valuable, price higher or sell higher than ours. And that just wasn't the case. Why is that? Because their pool, well, it was dingy and green and it was vacant, right? Or was it owner occupied, but it just didn't have the staging at all. And then those photographs, y'all, like the photographs, like I just like, you're not going to pay for this stuff, but I just urge you to make sure that whoever you work with, if you're not in our area and you work with a real estate agent, make sure that these folks don't talk you out of doing professional photography. The only reason I could see somebody not wanting to offer professional photography while they're listing a house is because they don't want to pay the $250 for the photographer.
It's $200. And that $200 could make you an additional $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000.
Yeah, maybe $250. And like, we've spent up to $800 on photographs occasionally for some of these, you know, $1 million plus homes and that kind of stuff. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, if somebody's not willing to invest $250 in some photographs, then I think you should be questioning whether or not you want to use them. So, the other thing I cannot figure out, and I think maybe we talked about this in another episode, but I cannot figure out how, sellers out there are not like on the horn with their agent immediately after it being listed and saying, "What in the heck? My house looks like crap. Where are the professional photos and all that kind of stuff?"
Do you know why that is?
I don't know, because our clients, man, they're like, they reach out to us right away, you know?
Yeah. Well, we talked about it before, but it's like something like 80% of people will use the first agent that they come in contact with or interview, right? And if those people, those clients don't know any different, then they're just going to accept the service that they're given because they don't have anything to compare it to. Our clients, we've built a brand that's very, very high end, very premium, and we would expect nothing less, right? I'd be embarrassed to put on a house that had blurry photos, bad staging, or was dirty. So it's kind of a reflection of our own personalities, right?
Yeah. And for you real estate agents out there that are listening, because I know we have a lot of real estate agents that listen to this as well. I got to tell you that like presenting your houses with quality staging and quality photography, it doesn't only benefit the seller. We've got a couple of benefits on our end as well. One, our listings tend to sell faster, which is always a good thing. They tend to sell with more offers, which is always a good thing. It's easier to negotiate when you have all these offers to choose from. But Andrew was at an open house this weekend and had two neighbors come through. How'd that go?
Well, they were blown away by our presentation. And one of those owners was the owner of the house that's listed down the street.
Ooh, I didn't know that. I wouldn't have brought that up.
Yeah, so that's kind of kind of rough, right? I mean, and it sucks because they had their house listed much higher. And then when we came on the market, they immediately did a price reduction. And the offer we're going to take is now higher than what they were initially listed at, which means they're going to probably have to drop even more just to get theirs sold. Whereas we have the same floor plan, right? We have an office downstairs. They have a bedroom, so they have one more bedroom, but same difference, right? It's an easy fix. There should be no reason why that house shouldn't go for the same amount that we just accepted for on our own property.
Probably more. It comes down to presentation. Extra downstairs bedroom and they have a pool. Like it seems to me that it should go for more. But anyway, and you had another one that came through, was very impressed and are considering selling too. And I would imagine that you will be getting that phone call, won't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So for all of you agents, please, please just invest the $250 in the photography, help your clients get the house staged, whether that's just you giving them the advice or helping them bring a stager in or doing what we do and stage the houses for the sellers, just do it. It helps everyone involved. Buyers love it too. All right. Enough of that. We're going to go to the five criteria for selecting a good offer. So you're going to be looking at all these offers after your house is on the market. You've done everything that you should do to get it ready on the market. You've got your professional photography. So now the offers are rolling in just like we had on our listing in Natomas. And how do you select the best one? Well, we're going to break it down into five parts. There are probably obviously a few others, but these are the five main. We're going to start with number one. What's the number one most important thing that sellers tend to look at when they're looking at offers?
So most of the time, I would say 95% of the time, your purchase price is going to be the most important criteria, right? You can have all the best terms in the world, this and that, cash money. But if you're not getting the price that you want at the end of the day, then it's not really worthwhile, right? So number one for me is purchase price.
I would agree. And we get folks who have all cash and they have these great terms and they'll come in and they'll offer $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 less than some of the other offers. And they feel like because they're cash that the seller would want to accept it. And that's just not been our experience. Our experience is that money talks, and the advantage of a cash offer is obviously the risk of that falling out of escrow goes down a little bit because you don't have a loan. But honestly, I can't remember the last time I had a deal fall out for lending. I mean, I've got close a few times, but most of the time lending's pretty solid, especially if you're working with good lenders. The other advantage of cash is you can close a little sooner sometimes because the lending needs to kind of go through their processes, and it generally is going to take anywhere from 21 to 30 days to get a loan closed. So cash, you know, you can do it in 10, 14 days is usually a good time frame for cash. So that's an advantage. But beyond that, there's not a lot more going on with cash. And so you got to ask yourself, is that, you know, shortened timeline of a week or two, is it really worth $10, $15, $20,000? Well, most of our sellers are saying no. Most of our sellers are going for cash.
I always break it down as if you have a cash offer, they can close quickly, right? They can close in as short as 5, 7 days, 10 days, whatever it is. But if you have another offer on the table that's say $20,000 or $25,000 higher that can close in 21 or 25 days, I always ask the seller, How long would it take you to earn $25,000 at your job normally? Most people would say months, right? And I was like, well, in that case, I think we can afford to hold out and wait an extra 10 days to make an extra $25,000. And more oftentimes than not, they're on board with it.
Yeah, I'd agree. So we're just telling you that in our experience with our sellers, they're choosing the dollar amount over the terms. Now, we came into this market that we had last several months, this past spring and summer, and the terms definitely played a role like I've never seen them play before, except that the only thing is that those terms were coupled with amazing prices at the same time. I mean, it still really came down to the money, and then we just had really great terms. So that brings us to number two, doesn't it? Financing. What do you got on financing, Andrew?
So we've already touched on it a little bit as part of purchase price, but financing can come in a couple different forms. Obviously you have cash. Second most competitive generally is going to be a conventional loan where the person's putting down 10, 20%, something along those lines. Third would be probably FHA, VA are going to be pretty much tied there neck and neck. Those a lot of times, VA is obviously military, no down payment. And there's some other stipulations, that the seller has to abide by, some fees they have to cover. FHA is generally for the most part, like a first time home buyer loan, 3.5% down. Sometimes if you have credit, that's not so great. VA or FHA, can help you out there.
Solid, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah,
you can have credit scores pretty low and still roll with FHA, VA.
Yeah. So when looking at an offer, if you have two offers that are the same price, one's conventional, one's FHA, the conventional loan is going to be more solid just because the conventional loan can waive inspections. The condition of the property can be not as good and you can get away with it. FHA, VA, their quality control is much tighter. If the house needs repairs, a lot of times those repairs need to be done before the loan can fund. So you have to take that into consideration when you're looking at offers. Obviously, conventional is going to be an easier option. Your goal is to pick an offer where it's going to be the easiest path to the finish line. Conventional, you can waive inspections. You don't have to do repairs. FHA, VA, you're going to have to go through repairs and fixing up the house to be able to make that happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if we really can say that one is better than the other. I think we're just looking at the facts and what sellers tend to decide on. I mean, obviously we're always letting sellers make the decisions of what they want to do, which is the right thing to do, but, it comes down to money and it comes down to risk is number two with the financing, right? So with a conventional loan, many of the buyers are able and allowed to waive the appraisal or at least waive a portion of the appraisal. And in a market like today, we tend to see a lot of these homes that are selling above what their fair market value is. So it's common for us to get appraisals that come in below what the buyers was willing to pay for it. And that requires the buyer to have to come in with additional funds to cover the shortage of that appraisal. Well, with a VA loan, that's not allowed. I mean, the buyer can technically waive that, but at the end of the day, there's no teeth in it because the seller cannot hold that buyer accountable for that. There's an FHA, VA amendatory clause that requires that, or doesn't allow the seller to hold the buyer liable for a shortage in the appraisal. So that's generally what we're seeing as far as repairs and that kind of stuff go. It just depends on the house. I mean, we have many houses that, I would say that VA and FHA have not been particularly difficult as of late. There was a time in my career where they were very picky, but I think they learned that, they were harming their veterans and the very people that they wanted to help, because they weren't able to compete in the market. So we're huge fans of FHA and VA. We'd love to be able to get those done, but, there are some restrictions that, can make it kind of tough. And that kind of leads us into number three, inspections. What do we got on inspections?
Yeah, inspections. Obviously, if you're a buyer, you get an offer accepted or whatever, you have a 17-day standard contingency period where you're allowed to come in and inspect the home. You get a home inspection, a pest inspection, a roof inspection, sewer inspection. You can inspect whatever you want. We call them the core five generally when we pre-list.
We've never heard that before. Never.
So with that being said, when we get the inspections done, when we're representing a buyer, that generally is coupled with a request for repairs, right? You're going to go back to the seller and you're going to ask for these items to be fixed, or you're going to ask for a credit so they can go back and fix those, you know, when you have the time to do it after you close. So when we're looking at offers, generally we would want to see an offer that's going to waive their inspections up front. Less liability for the seller, less liability or less chance for the buyer to back out of the transaction. And ultimately, as a seller, that can save you money and time.
I mean, you talk like that's just like, that's easy to get done. Like everybody's just going to write offers and waive their inspections.
It happens all the time when we list houses.
Well, I think it's fair to discuss that though. I mean, I wouldn't say that that's the norm in our real estate market. We don't see buyers. I mean, let's look at our buyers. When our buyers are going in there and making purchases on houses, and of course we have buyers that are also removing those contingencies in specific situations, but we're not anywhere near the same percentage of buyers that are removing contingencies on our listings, are we?
So there's two things, right? Removing your inspection contingency, that just comes down as a buyer risk management, right? How much risk are you willing to take to get a home in a competitive situation? But the flip side of that, when we list homes, we provide all of those inspections up front.
That's you cannot say what you said without bringing this up to the to
absolutely.
The table. I mean, come on.
So when we represent sellers, we get those inspections done up front. And our goal is to entice a buyer and get them to remove their inspection contingency up front.
Entice. He's using all these great words today.
Entice.
Enticing the buyer.
A lot of times, if we provide all the information up front, the buyer's like, you know, we would have gotten these inspections anyways. We're not going to get any more inspections on top of this. We're comfortable with it. We're going to remove our inspection contingency up front, and it's going to make our offer that much stronger. And to our seller, that's adding stability to the escrow potentially, right? It's taking away an option for the buyer to back out. And the seller is not going to receive a request for repairs later on because the buyer's already removed that. So it's a win-win for everyone in my book.
It is. And getting the inspections up front is not a fail safe. It's not going to, like, there's still more that goes to it. There's still more finessing that has to happen in order to get those buyers to remove their contingencies up front. So again, if you're out of the area and you're entertaining this idea of getting inspections on your home prior to listing the home, so you can take advantage of this incredible phenomenon of getting offers without contingencies, then give us a call and we'll be happy to kind of walk you through it. So you can pass it on to your agent and help you through it, because getting the inspections alone is not enough. It's how it's presented. Just a quick trick for all of you agents out there that are listening again. It is very common for us to get offers on our listings that have had all their inspections done. It's very common for us to get offers with inspection contingency still in play. I think it's normal. I think most offers are written with contingencies. And so it's customary for that to happen. They're not prepared to have conversations with their clients about about removing contingencies and that kind of stuff. So it's pretty common. So one of the easy, quick questions that you just ask every one of those buyer's agents is like, hey, so we've provided you X, Y, and Z in inspections. I'm just curious, has your client shown any concern with any of the findings? More times than not, they want the house. They're going to be like, no, they're cool. They're cool with everything. They're totally cool. Okay, cool. And, you know, just curious, are they intending on getting any additional inspections? And we don't want to say that they can't, because they can, but that's just a question that I ask. Just a question, not just harmless question. Are they intending on getting any other inspections? Because I see that you have a 10-day inspection period still written in here. And more times than not, they'll say, you know what? I actually don't think that they're going to be writing or be ordering any other inspections. And then I'll let that agent come to their own conclusion that they should amend their offer, because I don't want to be in a position where I'm telling them that they have to. So plus I'm not the one negotiating here, right? I'm just the real estate agent. All right. So those are inspections. Give us a call if you have any questions with that.
I have a question.
Yeah, go for it.
So in terms of the seller gets inspections done and I, as a buyer, I'm thinking, well, maybe I want inspections. these inspectors that are coming out to do these home inspections, they, even though the seller is the one who bought them, these are independent inspectors. Yes or no?
That is correct. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And personally, I mean, we work in Sacramento, Yolo, Solano counties. We try to use inspectors that would be known in that market, right? So certain roof inspectors, certain pest inspectors that work in these markets, they're well known and trusted.
Reputable, recognizable.
Those are the inspectors that we try to use, because then we know that the buyer's agents are going to be familiar with them and more comfortable with them. With that being said, these inspections were ordered and paid for by the seller, and therefore any liability associated to any of those inspectors is attached to the seller and not the buyer. So if the buyer ended up coming back later on and feeling like the inspector messed up some way, they wouldn't have any recourse against those inspectors. Except for there's a way around that, and that is with home inspectors specifically, which are usually the big ones, they usually will offer you a reduced rate for them to come back out to the house and review their findings with you as the buyer, and then attach that liability. So you're protected there, and you can, you know, you can do the same with the other inspection reports if you want to.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious about that, because that's the instinctual things like, okay, well, the seller's doing this. I want to protect myself. How am I protecting myself? And is it sort of an independent thing? So that does answer that question, and as opposed to just being like, well, that's the seller's story.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, like we can't speak to every agent out there, every seller out there. And, you know, are there underhanded things happening every now and then? I mean, I'm not naive to say that it doesn't, but at the end of the day, every agent out there, every licensed agent out there, and every seller out there has a legal obligation to disclose any known material facts or defects that would potentially affect the desirability or the value of that home. And so anytime a seller hires these inspectors to go out and look at the house, that automatically becomes a disclosure to the buyer. So, and then a lot of these inspectors have their own licenses or own regulators, like pest inspectors are regulated by the Structural Pest Control Board and all that kind of stuff. If they get caught, you know, doing shady stuff, they're done. So, I haven't seen issues with that. So not to say it doesn't happen. And then that leads us to number four. We've kind of been tippy-toeing around this, because the purchase price plays into number four, as well as some of the financing terms also play into number four. Number four is appraisal. What do you got on appraisals?
Yeah. So an appraisal, basically, the bank will hire an appraiser. They will send him to the house, and that appraiser, it's a third party independent guy, he will give his independent,
or she,
he or she, they. Sorry. They will give their opinion of value on the home, and they're there to protect the bank. So at the end of the day, an offer is only as good as the appraisal. So if you were to offer $1 million on a house that's asking $500,000, that offer is only as good as the appraisal. So if the appraisal comes back at $520,000, the house is worth $520,000. The bank will only lend you up to the appraised value. So if there's any shortage between the appraised value and the offer price, then the buyer is liable to pay the difference in cash. But the seller has to come to an agreement, right? It's a secondary negotiation. If the seller doesn't agree to lower the price down to the appraised value, then the buyer needs to make up the difference in cash. If the buyer doesn't have the cash to be able to do that, then the seller can lower the purchase price down to the appraised value and make the lender happy to get the deal done.
So as it relates to a seller looking at offers and which one's best, naturally, if you get offers where the buyer is willing to waive the appraisal contingency altogether, and obviously this applies to the inspections. I don't think we actually capped it off with that, but anytime a buyer waives any of these types of inspections, or in this case, an appraisal, that's a benefit to the seller. That basically tells the seller upfront the day that you accept that offer, that if the appraisal comes in short, the seller has no responsibility to lower the price, and the buyer has no right to cancel the agreement as a result of it. So appraisal is something that we look at really closely today. There's a couple things we're going to look at. We're going to look at how we priced your home. Sometimes we intentionally like the Natomas house. We priced it just a few thousand dollars below what we felt like market value was. And obviously it launched us up above what we believe is market value. And there's a lot of these houses where we're finding ourselves getting into contract above what we believe is market value. And therefore, getting something like an appraisal contingency in play is super important, because you don't want to get 3 weeks down the road and then just find out you're going to have to reduce your house, down to the appraised value later on. So, that's something we watch very closely. Occasionally we'll come up with houses, where maybe we have some functional obsolescence to the house. The house is kind of weird, janky, something like that. And so therefore, it's going to sell lower than a lot of the area comps. And if that's the case, we don't have to worry about appraisal too much. But we have been running into a lot of appraisal issues. And that brings us to the last thing. So a buyer is going to remove their appraisal contingency at some point. They're going to remove their loan contingency and their inspection contingency at some point, or any other inspection contingencies they may have, but they're going to remove those. Some of them are going to remove them at the very beginning when the offer's first accepted. Others may remove them at different time periods throughout the escrow, but at some point that buyer is going to remove all their contingencies. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means they can't cancel the agreement. It means they have no contractual right to cancel the agreement. And if they do cancel the agreement after they've removed those contingencies, what might happen?
The buyers can lose their deposit. So it's called an earnest money deposit. It's a deposit that is submitted to the title and escrow company after your offer is accepted. Customarily in our area, anywhere from 1% to 3% is standard. And that money eventually will get rolled into your down payment. But if you get far enough into the purchase process where you remove all of your contingencies and you decide to cancel, you have the right to cancel. You can do that, but the sellers can keep your deposit. And in some cases that deposit can be $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. Okay. A lot of money. So factoring that in, I call it skin in the game. Sometimes we get offers where they submit a $1,000 earnest money deposit. And as a seller, you're looking at that offer and you're like, this buyer has no skin in the game. They could go and go through the whole purchase process, remove all their contingencies, waste our time, and then cancel. And all we get out of it as a seller is $1,000. Okay. That doesn't look good on paper. So what we recommend generally is 3%, which is a lot of money, but it shows that the buyer is absolutely committed to the purchase process. And from a seller standpoint, that's what you want to see.
Yeah. I mean, it's more than just wasting your time, by the way. I mean, you have to go back on the market with what I call a black eye. People are wondering, what's wrong with that house? That kind of stuff. You're never going to be able to garner the same level of interest the second time around as you did the first. So you really want to get that. You want to make that first offer stick. There's no doubt about it. And earnest money deposits, another one of those things that we like to use as sellers to kind of test the waters with a buyer. Now, I don't know about you, but if a buyer is going to go sideways on me, I'd rather that happen early than late, right? I'd rather that buyer go sideways on me before I accept their offer, go pending into the computer, into the MLS, than later on down the road. And so I think the earnest money deposit is one of the best things that you can counter. I mean, sometimes we're looking for things to counter, but really the reason we're doing is because we want to just test that buyer a little bit. Right? We would just want to test them a little bit. So earnest money deposit, like Andrew said, the entire earnest money deposit goes towards your down payment anyway. So it's not costing you a thing. The only thing that earnest money is doing is holding you accountable to closing contract and following through on this contract. That's it. So if somebody puts a 1% earnest money deposit down, I don't see the problem with countering them and saying, hey, you know, we want you to put 2% down. And then obviously the question to the buyer's agent from us as the listing agent would, if they're balking at that, I would just say, well, do you have some concerns that this buyer doesn't intend to follow through with the contract? Well, of course not. Well, then what do they have to lose by going to 2%? It's kind of one of those, just, it's an unfair question, but I ask it anyway.
So what I will say, when I meant by wasting time is that I've seen over the course of my career, you'll come across agents and buyers that are submitting offers on multiple houses at one time and not disclosing it. And to reduce their liability or their risk, they go and they submit a $1,000 EMD deposit. That way, when they're trying to float between houses and see which one they're going to get, you know, if a mistake happens and they end up removing their contingencies and they decide they don't want that house, they're only out $1,000. Okay. I consider that a waste of time. And to test that, we ask them to raise their earnest money deposit, upfront.
Yeah. There's an easier way to do that, by the way. Like, you don't have to be playing that game. Just put the timeline for response, shorten it up.
You do that too.
Just give them 10 hours to respond. If they don't respond, you go to house number two, something like that. But, yeah. So earnest money deposit, when you get your offer, that's one of the first things you're going to see on that purchase agreement. I don't know what your purchase agreement looks like, but ours, it's right towards the very beginning of the entire process of the contract. You're going to take a look at it and you're going to, in my opinion, you should take the opportunity to push back on the seller, on the buyer a little bit there and get them up. And I don't really care what the dollar amount is. I'm more interested in testing the waters there.
Seeing how committed they are.
And being able to answer that impossible question or being able to ask that impossible question. Well, the question's not impossible. The answer is though. So those are your top five criteria that you should be looking at when you're ready to accept an offer. And again, give us a call. I don't care if you're out of the area. Give us a call. We'd love to be able to chat with you about it. If you're a real estate agent and you want to give us a call and talk about some of these strategies that we use, feel free. Give us a call. Email us at podcast@higginshomesearch.com. podcast@higginshomesearch.com. And if there's any other topics that you guys want to hear about, by all means, let us know, man. We'll talk about it. podcast@higginshomesearch.com. And we'll see you on the next one.